Eurasia integration is on the move. The Islamic Republic of Iran, along with its Muslim neighbour Turkey and the two regional giants Russia and China, is part of the emerging independent bloc for collective development of a vast region that ought to be protected from the meddling Western powers, their local agents and the terrorists they breed. Stay with us for an interesting article by Brazilian journalist Pepe Escobar, written for the Asia Times. The piece is titled, Eurasia Integration is on the Move. The Eurasia Economic Union is spreading its wings and gaining strength, with some key projects, big players and big plans in the pipeline. As Presidents Vladimir Putin, Hassan Rouhani and Recep Tayyip Erdogan met in Ankara recently for a second Russia-Iran-Turkey summit on the future of Syria, Moscow hosted its seventh international security conference attended by defense ministers from dozens of nations. A more graphic illustration of the synchronicity drive towards Eurasia integration would be hard to find. Crucially, China sent not only a high-ranking delegation to Moscow, but most of all a loud and clear message. General Wei Fenghe, a new Chinese defense minister, side by side with Russian counterpart Sergei Shoigu, said, "The Chinese side came to let the Americans know about the close ties between the Russian and Chinese armed forces." General Sergei Shoigu, for his part, underlined the special character of the Russia-China partnership. Even before the meeting, the Daily Global Times stressed the point that non-stop Russia demonization, coupled with the now rolling US-China trade war, will only strengthen the special character of the partnership between Moscow and Beijing. And then Iran's Defense Minister, Brigadier General Amir Khatami, expanded the scope, saying, "Foreign plans related to security in the Middle East would inevitably fail. They must be hatched within Southwest Asia." What happened in Moscow necessarily must be crossed over with what happened in Ankara. It was a common commitment. The first Iran-Russia-Turkey trilateral meeting on Syria was in Sochi, in southern Russia, on November 22nd last year. Sochi led to the formation of the Syrian National Dialogue Congress and a 150-strong committee tasked to draft a new constitution for Syria. All of these procedures essentially followed guidelines established by the 2012 Geneva peace process. Even the United Nations praised Sochi as an important contribution to a revived intra-Syrian talk process. For the Ankara meeting, the foreign ministers of Russia, that is Sergei Lavrov, foreign minister of Iran, Mohammad Javad Zarif, and the foreign minister of Turkey, Mevlut Çavuşoğlu, had met in Astana in early April to prepare the terrain. The final joint statement is unmistakable, emphasizing their common commitment to the sovereignty, unity, independence, and territorial integrity of Syria. The fact that Ankara is Vladimir Putin's first foreign trip after re-election speaks volumes. The Russia-Iran-Turkey strategy on Syria, incrementally developed in Astana, established a delicate balance of de-escalation zones, the Damascus suburb of Eastern Ghouta, Idlib, Homs, and the Syrian-Jordanian border, and humanitarian corridors allowing scopes of civilians to leave war zones, especially in the case of Eastern Ghouta, where in a desperate move the besieged terrorists in Douma gassed the civilians before being held as human shield by them in a vain bid to put the blame on the government of President Bashar al-Assad. The war in Eastern Ghouta against the Takfiri terrorist Jihadi Galaxy has been all but won by the Syrian Arab Army, supported by a Russian mix of air support and negotiation skills and, significantly, no input from Iranian military advisers. So-called moderate rebel remnants were dispatched to Idlib Damascus is free from shelling. That was the Syrian Arab Army's biggest victory after the liberation of Aleppo in December of 2016. Northern Syria, however, remains a much trickier proposition, as we have a de facto NATO versus NATO subplot, Turkish troops versus the YPG Kurds, a proxy US force. The fact that the Syrian Arab Army-Russia offensive in eastern Ghouta happened in parallel to the neo-Orwellian operation Olive Branch by the Turks in the Kurdish canton of Afrin spells out a complex Russia-Iran-Turkey deal worked out in Astana, as diplomats confirmed to Asia Times. As much as Tehran may be exasperated by Turkish military incursions into Syria by ordering Iranian commanders not to interfere in both eastern Ghouta and in Afrin, Tehran made sure Ankara would not derail the extermination and or transfer of terrorists threatening Damascus. The key discussion at the trilateral summit in Ankara was about what happens next in Idlib, now the ultimate terrorist refugee called moderate rebels by the West. It is a place where Tahrir al-Sham, which is connected to al-Qaeda terrorists, is fighting a supposedly Syrian liberation front, backed by Turkey, and also happens to harbour hardcore terrorists such as the Ahrar al-Sham. It will all hinge on whether Ankara will be able to persuade this congregation of nasty forces that the war is in fact over. Otherwise, the Syrian Arab Army, backed by the Russian air power, will embark on yet another bombing campaign, potentially adding extra hundreds of thousands of refugees to the 3.5 million already holed up inside Turkey's borders. What is certain is that Ankara does not feel inclined to leave Syria's northwest and north-central areas anytime soon. How Moscow and Tehran, not to mention Damascus, will react is an explosive open question. The Russia-Turkey partnership is all business, centred on a crucial energy, nuclear and weapons triangle. Russia, at the onset of the creation of the nuclear industry in Turkey, according to presidential aide Yuri Ushakov, will start building Turkey's first nuclear power plant at Akuyu at a cost of $20 billion. The first reactor is expected to be ready by 2023, and the plant will be owned by Russia. Following a contract signed last December, Moscow will also deliver the S-400 surface-to-air defense system to Ankara before 2020, earlier than expected. NATO is not exactly pleased. And then there is the $12 billion Turkstream gas pipeline, which is a work in progress, with the overland segment about to receive a go-ahead permit from Ankara. Several European Union members are not exactly pleased. All that spells out Russian diplomacy carefully strengthening relations with pinpointed EU-NATO member states, even as the ultimate target may be to convince NATO to de-escalate from Russia's western borderlands or from the Cold War 2.0 Iron Curtain from the Baltic to the Black Sea. That's still a long way from a game changer such as Turkey actually ditching NATO. A stalemate would certainly be reached as a concerted Russia-China charm offensive may lead Recep Tayyip Erdogan to consider the benefits of joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO. Ankara is deepening its business ties with both Pakistan, a full SCO member, and Iran, now an observer status and about to become a full member of the SCO. Russia, China, and Iran are the three key vectors of Eurasia integration, which includes everything from Pipelinistan to trade connectivity networks. Erdogan does not covet the role of sideshow spectator. And just like clockwork, an extra Russia-Iran integration node may be added as Tehran is expected to join the Russia-led Eurasia Economic Union, the EEU, before the end of the year. The Free Trade EEU, or the Eurasia Economic Union, now harbouring Russia, Kazakhstan, Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Vietnam, is attracting interest from everyone from China, India and Indonesia to Serbia and South American nations. Erdogan is certainly paying attention. From the start, Syria was a Pipelinistan war. A key target was to ditch the prospect of a $10 billion Iran-Iraq-Syria gas pipeline. A memorandum of understanding was signed in 2011, and replace it with a Qatar to Turkey pipeline via a regime change Syria. Qatar and the House of Saud ended up certified geopolitical losers in the war in Syria. The Saudi blockade of Qatar failed miserably. The new equation reveals Qatar supported by Oman and Kuwait, getting closer to Iran and even closer to Turkey. Ankara operates the Tariq bin Ziyad military base in Qatar. Iran and Qatar are deepening their cooperation in South Pass gas field, the largest gas field on the planet. Stranger things have happened and foreseeing a pipeline finally being completed in the near future, carrying Iran-Qatar gas and transiting through Turkey, even as Russia and China remain actively involved in the Qatari gas industry. With the prospect of Syrian reconstruction finally at hand, Beijing will turbocharge its plan to turn Syria into a key Belt and Road Initiative node. On the Russian front, Energy Minister Alexander Novak has confirmed that energy giant Lukoil and Gazprom Neft are already focused on rebuilding and developing Syria's badly damaged energy infrastructure following a cooperation roadmap signed last February. Russian companies have been invited to upgrade the Bani Yas refinery and to build a new refinery in partnership with Iran and Venezuela. Damascus and Moscow will launch a direct shipping line to facilitate trade and set up a bank controlled by their own central banks. According to the Syrian Prime Minister, Wael al-Haqi, nearly $1 billion US worth of agreements on energy, trade and finance have been signed. Previously, Syria's ambassador to Russia, Riyad Haddad, promised that nations which helped Syria fight terrorism have the right to be at the forefront of those restoring the country's economy. That means essentially Russia, Iran and China. It remains to be seen what role, if any, will be played by Erdogan's neo-Ottomanism.